We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank.
Pay heed all who enter. Beware this podcast. This is the Pay Heed Podcast. I'm Nick Springer alongside my good friend Kevin Flaherty, covering all things KU. We are brought to you by M-Prize Bank, your partner in all things possible, member FDIC here on Pay Heed. Kevin, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Nick. It's fun to be shooting a football podcast here in April. You know, it's something that a few years ago, I think I would have been very interested in. I think you would have been very interested. I'm just not sure how many people would have been interested to listen to people talk about Kansas football, but it's a new time over in Lawrence.
That's right. Kansas football officially wrapped up their spring. They actually had a practice after their spring showcase last week, but they are officially done. And we're going to talk about all that and more on this episode of the Pay Heed Podcast. Be sure to hit that like, subscribe button wherever you're watching or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us a comment, leave us a review. If we suck, you can say we suck. If we're great, you can say we're great, whichever. However you want to do it, be sure to do that on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. Okay, so Kevin, spring ball comes to an end for KU. What to you is the biggest thing that you are still thinking about after the end of a spring ball for KU so far?
Yeah, it's an interesting deal because the transfer portal has changed the way we think of everything. And that, you know, coming out of spring before, if you had holes, you know, you were kind of biting your fingernails like all the way through and saying there's no way to fix this at this point. Or maybe you were hoping that a freshman or a summer JUCO guy would show up and be better than expected or hit the ground running. But now, you know, with the extra portal window, with guys going in after spring practice at their old places, there are still some concerns. I think there's still some holes, especially I don't think that Kansas has holes where you say, hey, this isn't a bowl team or whatever else. But it's kind of a stated goal, right? You know, LJ Arnold has talked about, you know, this is a team that thinks that they can compete for and win the Big 12. He said it a year or two ago. You know, it last year, if you look at it with the close games and everything else, you know, they had that potential. They could have been a 10 or 11 win team. As it was, they won 9. They had a breakout season, certainly. But I think when you look at it at the spring, you don't necessarily jump up and say, oh my gosh, Kansas is going to win the Big 12. But you do say, there are some areas that maybe they need to stand to fix a little bit or tune up if that's going to be a realistic goal for them. What were kind of your thoughts and your takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point, right, this is a kind of a make or break year for KU, right? Yeah. I mean, you look back at the year they went to the Liberty Bowl with Arkansas, like they were maybe quote unquote a year ahead of schedule, right, that year. Then last year, they kind of put it together and they're able to get to that 9-win mark, even with some of the hurdles they faced over the course of the season with some of their quarterback injuries and so on and so forth. And so you look at this year and it's like, okay, this is the year where maybe, yes, you can go out and achieve that stated goal of competing for the Big 12 title. And in a year where the college football playoff is expanded, we could be talking about the playoff for it. So there's no question that that is something that this team can achieve. And one of the big takeaways for me, just hearing from the coaches and players, is that they really want to avoid complacency. You heard that a lot last year too, I think, where for a program that was so bad for so long, like going to the Liberty Bowl felt like going to the Super Bowl for probably some fans, you know? So now you've built that level of expectation of, you know what, we want to achieve more. We believe we can achieve more. And that's something that I think Lance Leipold does a great job of. I think that's probably one of his biggest strengths is that, I mean, this was a dude that lost like, what, 6 games in 10 years at Wisconsin Whitewater or whatever it was. So, you know, he's always looking to achieve more and always looking to push more. And I think when you've still got a team that KU has this year where you still have some guys on this team that they experienced some of the lows that KU has seen over the last 5 years, right? You go back to, you know, I mean, listen, it wasn't that long ago that Jalen Daniels, a 17-year-old, was getting absolutely destroyed on every play against Oklahoma. Devin Neal obviously has been around. He knows, you know, he understands what's going on here. You've got that group of receivers as well. So I think you've got a really great mix of those types of players that have still remembered that and are saying, okay, now look where we are now and look what we can achieve going forward. So, yeah, I'm excited for this. I mean, this is probably the most anticipated KU football season, I would think, maybe since the season after the Orange Bowl, I would think.
I would say 2009 because,
yeah,
2007, they wind up going to the Orange Bowl. 2008 was highly anticipated. But then 2009, you know, you brought back Reising and Briscoe and Meyer and all those guys. And a lot of people were saying, hey, you know, if Kansas wasn't the favorite to win the Big 12 North that year, they were certainly in the discussion. They won their first 5 games. And so, you know, people were all aboard the bandwagon. A lot of things went wrong, you know, injuries, different things. And obviously, you know, you had a coaching change after the season. But I think that was probably the last time that people were this excited heading into it was 2009. I think a lot of people felt like, hey, this is a team that has a real chance to compete in the Big 12 and potentially win the Big 12 North that year. Obviously, no more Big 12 North, but there is a little bit of a similarity in that there were times where Kansas got an easy Big 12 North rotation because of the way that Kansas's rotation was staggered. This year, Kansas's schedule is pretty manageable, and you hate, especially, you know, being around Kansas football to count wins on your fingers and things like that, because, you know, it's one of those things where something could always go wrong. You could have injuries or whatever else. But I do think that when you look at the perceived contenders in the Big 12 this year, Kansas avoids a lot of them. And, you know, Kansas only has one of those contenders away from Lawrence, and that's at Kansas State. And so when you look at that schedule, it really does potentially set up nicely with such an experienced team, so many senior guys, all of those different things to where it's on the table for Kansas now. There aren't excuses. There's not, hey, we're building this thing up still. And they are trying to build still, but they feel like they're at or around where they need to be to take advantage of this.
Yeah, and you think about some of the storylines of this spring, a big one is Jalen Daniels, right?
Sure.
On one hand, he is a guy who was a Heisman candidate and is an incredible, incredibly talented player. But unfortunately, the reality situation is he hasn't played a full season of fully healthy for KU. And yeah, you had Jason Bean as sort of your security blanket the past couple seasons. Well, you don't really have him anymore. I like Cole Ballard a lot, but I don't think he's Jason Bean, right? Jason Bean was probably the best backup in the country.
Yeah,
the past couple seasons. So, you know, I think seeing Jalen Daniels at the spring showcase was nice to see, and I think it's promising. I've also kind of maintained, like, at the end of the day, I don't really care what Jalen Daniels does in April. I care about what he's doing in August, right? Like, right before the games actually start. So, I don't know. I kind of try to temper my expectations with that aspect of it. But, you know, you bring him back. Obviously, Devin Neal, the receivers. You look at the defense. You've got Kobe Bryant and Melo Dotson. You've got a guy like Tavy Brown. You have lost some pieces that are some significant pieces, but you still feel like this is a team that with a little bit of an easier schedule and maybe catching some of the right breaks this year compared to last year, 10, 11 wins seems to be fully on the table.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas doesn't often have a preseason offensive Big 12 player of the year. And to get 3 games out of that guy and still win 9 games, I think is such a testament to one, the overall team, but two, I thought by the end of the year, and there were certain times before that where, you know, Jason Bean was maybe a little bit more flawed, but I really thought at the end of the year, he was playing about as high level of quarterback as Kansas has seen since Todd Reising. And I'm not saying it was better than Jalen Daniels. I think it was fairly close to on level when you look at that Iowa State game in particular against that defense and the way he played, the way he played to close out the season. You know, Jason Bean was really, really good at the end of it. I agree with you. I do think that there's a drop-off there. Cole Ballard has toughness. Obviously, he was absolutely thrown into the fire last year. You know, when you walk on somewhere and you're a true freshman, you don't expect to ever even sniff the field, much less have your first start be a rivalry game against Kansas State. And that's not even counting the week before where he has to come in mid-game after Jason Bean suffers an injury against Texas Tech. Leads, you know, kind of the comeback to tie that thing up, and unfortunately they wind up losing at the end. But that is a little bit of a concern, because when Jalen Daniels is healthy, you know, a lot of people try to make comparisons or different things like that. Jalen Daniels is tough really to even put a figure on it, because the things that he does in terms of off schedule, the things that he does in terms of what the defense has to respect when he's out there, the way that he's able to buy time and survey down the field and create big plays out of nothing. You know, there are so many things that he adds to the offense that you really can't even put, you know, sort of a figure to. And so if he's healthy all year long, Kansas is, I think, a Big 12 title contender. If he's not, we're probably having a different conversation. That's even with the talent around him and everything else. And, you know, the fact is, you know, Andy Kotelnicki built a pretty good offense around him being gone. And, you know, the things that they did in the running game, you know, with Devin Neal running Wildcat and all of those things, Andy Kotelnicki's not around anymore. And that's not a knock on Grimes. I think that Grimes is going to do some things that fans are going to prefer probably to Andy Kotelnicki. And I think that there are going to be some things about Andy Kotelnicki that they miss. You know, he was a very creative guy and kind of saw things in a different way. But I do think you're absolutely right on Jalen. I will say I do care what he does in April, given that, you know, he hadn't been really doing a whole lot this spring. And so the longer that mounts up where, you know, he doesn't have to play in the spring, he knows what he's doing, all of those different things. But the longer it lasts, the more you're saying, oh my gosh, is this back thing going to last forever? Is it going to keep going on? And so to see him out there at the spring showcase, looking like Jalen, dancing around, you know, getting out, scrambling, making, you know, full body throws with torque and twisting and doing all of those different things, that part I thought was really encouraging. I agree with you. Like, the tale will be told in September, but I think in terms of the whole doomsday scenario and, you know, is Jalen not going to be ready for the season or whatever else, I think you put a lot of those doubts to rest just by being fairly active at the spring showcase.
We will get more into thoughts from the spring showcase and plenty more KU football discussion here on the Paid Podcast. First, we got to take a break. And before we do that, got to tell you about our friends at Home Field Apparel. Go to homefieldapparel.com, check them out. You can use the promo code KCSN23, 50% off your first order. I've got this sweet Jayhawks t-shirts. They've got some sweaters. I've got a KU sweater. If you're trying to plan ahead for, you know, maybe next fall already, it's time to figure out what you're going to wear for the KU games at Children's Mercy Foster.
It's an Arrowhead.
Yeah, exactly. It will get cold at Arrowhead, so maybe you check out some sweaters. They've got some awesome joggers. I got a pair of those as well. So be sure to check out Homefield Apparel. They've got over 50 items from KU and over 130 other schools you could choose from. And be sure to use promo code KCSN23 for 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. We're back with more KU football talk right after this.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Pay Heed Podcast along with Kevin Flaherty. I'm Nick Springer. If you like what you're listening to or seeing, be sure to hit the like and subscribe button, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Leave us a comment, leave us a five-star review, all that great stuff. Kevin, one more final thought I had on kind of the quarterbacks discussion we were just having. Something that I've thought about just kind of, you know, in a vacuum maybe or whatever is, if Jalen Daniels didn't exist, where would Jason Bean fall on the pantheon of KU quarterbacks? I mean, you look at some of the numbers that he's put up, and they're comparable to, like, you know, a Todd Reesing type player. Like, I don't know, is that too crazy to say? But I was just thinking about that. Like, if Jalen Daniels never existed or wasn't on this KU team, where would Jason Bean fall on the list of quarterbacks in KU history?
Oh gosh, in KU history, that's a tough one, and it's kind of interesting because KU history has had a lot of guys that had like a year or so here and there. Carter Stanley had a really good year. You know,
yeah.
you look at Bill Whittemore was kind of banged up, had a really good final season as well. Mark Williams leading the 10-win team in 95. The stats weren't necessarily there, but he was a guy that when you watched him, you know, he was kind of a prototype type guy that, you know, it was very apparent that he was really good. But you know, I think Bean was playing, you know, Todd Reesing, when you look at the modern quarterbacks, I think when you go back into the past, John Hadle was probably the best quarterback that Kansas has ever had when you talk about being an NFL all-pro type guy. But I think that when you look at the modern guys, it's kind of Reesing and then a drop-off. I think the drop-off isn't maybe as big as we would have thought between him and where Bean was at the very end. Todd Reesing is still number one with a bullet. I do think that Bean definitely approached Bill Whittemore. I think I would give the edge to Whittemore probably. He didn't have as much around him. You know, he was kind of making something out of nothing. Mark Mangino said once about Bill Whittemore, and it always cracked me up. He said that Todd Reesing ran for fun because he chose to. Bill Whittemore ran for survival, and I think that, you know, when you add all of that in, you know, Bean is probably, I would say, adding Jalen in there too. You know, Bean is probably the fourth or so best quarterbacks from 2000 on or so.
Okay, so coming out of the spring showcase, you were there, had a chance to kind of watch it at Rock Chalk Park, a bit of a different environment, obviously, with the stadium renovation construction happening. First off, just what do you think of the environment? And then on top of that, what was maybe your biggest positives from watching the showcase?
Yeah, the environment was really cool, and I think it gave an interesting preview into what the two games over at Children's Mercy Park are going to look like, because it was a more intimate atmosphere. You know, you're a lot closer to the field than you typically are, and so it was a lot easier to follow along. I thought Kansas did a great job of making it a really fan-friendly event, in addition to the games and the concessions and things like that. I went to a Royals practice right before the season started, and they wouldn't even tell you who was in the batting cage. So somebody would hit like a frozen rope, you know, out over the wall, and you're like, I can't even tell who hit that. You know, and you know, just by having an announcer and telling you, like, hey, you know, Johnny Thompson was on the carry, Cornell Wheeler on the tackle, you know, you got a lot of value from that. I thought they did a really good job with that. One of the main takeaways, I think, because Kansas sat the starters so much once the actual scrimmage started, is I think Kansas has a lot of young talent, and that hasn't always been the case recently. And you look at some of the guys, you know, Harry Stewart got about 35,000 carries. I mean, I'm sure that he was, you know.
Hey, that's an exact stat, by the way.
At it and everything afterwards. Isaiah Marshall got a ton of action, you know, had some true freshman moments, but also had some really good plays where he had some nice throws. You know, they blew the whistle dead pretty much the second he crossed the line of scrimmage on runs. So you didn't get a chance to see that 10-9, 100-meter dash come into play, really. And you look at Dak Brinkley, who maybe didn't, you know, have the best overall scrimmage. You could tell he's kind of a longer, skinnier, you know, more slender guy at this point. Weight room is going to be really important for him. But from a frame standpoint, Nick, like, I used to cover Texas, and you would go in when the freshman would get there, and you could see, okay, this freshman's getting, you know, having a tough time right now, but you could see the vision. You could see the quickness, the length, all of those things. And, hey, this guy's going to be pretty good in 2 or 3 years. That was kind of what I thought with Brinkley a little bit. You saw those flashes and everything else. I know that he's a redshirt freshman, but Keaton Kubeka had some really nice moments. And so when you go down the line a little bit, you maybe didn't get as great a look at the starters, and that's by design. But at the same time, I think Kansas may have more of those sort of young foundational pieces that came in for the spring or were already on campus than they've had in a while. And that's before guys like Darius Warner and some of the other guys show up.
Yeah, I think for me,
I don't know why I said Darius Warner.
Deshaun Warner, yeah. I think Deshaun Warner is the guy certainly to keep an eye on coming in from Phoenix. But I think one of my takeaways was you look at – I thought Lance Leipold said it best with Devin Neal, to your point about not having to see starters, is I don't need to see Devin Neal get tackled. And I agree. Like, I don't need to see Devin Neal getting tackled. That's not something I need to see until we're playing real football. So, yeah, it was good to see a lot of those guys. And honestly, I had fairly low expectations for the actual, like, scrimmage part in terms of, like, what they were going to do. And they ended up doing quite a bit more than I was expecting, which I think was cool. Get the fans involved, got the fans excited. So that was all good with me. Like, I didn't really think there was going to be much in that way, and they ended up doing quite a bit more.
You had a trick pass in there. You know,
that was great.
Sweep to Cole Ballard that winds up, you know, throwing back and getting the touchdown pass. And, yeah, it was interesting from that regard. You know, obviously they didn't have quarterback run game really in, and quarterbacks were wearing, you know, the non-tackle jerseys anyway. But I think that will be something to watch going forward is there going to be option? If so, how much option is there going to be, you know, for a couple reasons? You know, one, that wasn't really something Grimes did at Baylor. There wasn't a whole lot of option and things like that. But the other part is you've got a quarterback who's played 12 games over the last 2 years. You know, how much option do you really want there to be? You know, I'm not saying that they don't want to run it ever. It's very effective for them. And it's very tough for other teams to prepare to face it because you don't necessarily see that week in and week out. It gives you an advantage if it's something that you're comfortable doing because they're generally not as comfortable facing it. But having said that, you know, there wasn't a lot of quarterback run game. There was more screen game, and I do think that that's something we're going to see more of under Grimes, is I do think there's going to be more screens. And so, you know, those fans who are going out there and preparing to yell when you throw it short of the sticks on third down, you know, there are going to be some screen passes on third and eight. You should be prepared for that happening. I think there's going to be a little bit more jet sweep stuff than maybe what they've run in the past. But generally speaking, and Leipold, I think, has referred to it as Grimes is running the Kansas offense still. But having said that, every offensive coordinator is a little bit different. They all call games a little bit differently. There are always things that they gravitate toward a little bit more. And I do think we could see maybe a little bit of a taper back of option. We could see a little bit more screen and a little bit more jet sweep.
Yeah, I think with Jeff Grimes, you know, he had some great comments towards the end of spring after the spring showcase, kind of about that exact subject of, hey, I have come to a team where the previous year's offense was terrible. And when you do that, you come in and you say, okay, now we're going to do what I like to do. And I thought it was so interesting when he was talking about, you know, hey, now I'm coming to Kansas where the offense has been really good under Andy Kolnicki over the past couple seasons, and coming in and figuring out, okay, what is it that I still want to bring that I can add to this offense that's part of what I like to do versus what is it that I can just kind of let, you know, let the offense continue to be what it is really. And I think that'll be an interesting line to walk for KU, right? I mean, who knows? There could be some possible growing pains with Grimes as the OC as well. But I think he's a very experienced coach. There's no question about that. He's coached with some real talented players. You think about guys like Zach Wilson. That Baylor offense, I think in 2021, was like a top five rushing offense with Grimes. So he's obviously had a lot of success. But I am very curious about how exactly he chooses to implement what he wants to do versus maybe some of the things that KU has done under Andy Kolnicki. One of the things that I am extremely curious about, Kevin, is going under center. I know that's something that Jeff Grimes likes to do. How much do you really expect that KU might be doing that versus maybe more out of the shotgun like traditionally?
Yeah, I think there's going to be some more of that. And it's interesting because if you look at the most consistent coach, arguably, over the course of the Big 12, it's probably Mike Gundy. And when you look at their success, they run Oklahoma State's offense. And it looked a little bit different under Dana Holgorsen than it did under Larry Fedora. It looks a little bit different with Casey Dunn, you know, as opposed to what it did under the previous guys. But it's still, for the most part, Oklahoma State's offense. And so there are things that they all gravitate towards. Kansas is still going to base out a wide zone. That was something that KU loves to do. It's something that Grimes and Baylor love to do. That's still going to be your bread and butter. And Kansas has some running backs that are pretty good at running wide zone. And they have an offensive line that I think, you know, has guys that are built to run that. And so that's still going to be a major part of what they do. I think the window dressing is going to be very similar. You're going to see a lot of guys in motion. You're going to see, you know, sort of that attempt to show the defense a lot of looks, while at the same time maybe still being fairly simple offensively in what you do. And so I think there are going to be so many things that are going to be the same, but at the same time, I do think there are going to be a few areas here or there where he leans into kind of what his bread and butter is on a third and eight, and it might not be the same thing that Andy Kolnicki does. I'll be very interested to see the difference on third and two. Is there going to be a sugar huddle? You know, it was something that the Kansas fans are not particularly care for. I think that Grimes is probably going to not run that and is probably going to be a little bit more deliberate maybe with what they do. And that would be something that Kansas fans would, I think, appreciate.
Listen, if we got Devin Neal, it's okay to just run HB dive one time. Like, we could just run a little HB dive, get the first down, call it good. That was kind of my thoughts sometimes.
Yeah. I think Andy Kolnicki was a terrific offensive coordinator. You can say, even obviously the stats back that up. And even beyond the stats, it was a fun offense to watch. But there were a lot of people who thought it was absolutely maddening to have, you know, a third and one, have, you know, a really good offensive line they had last year, have Devin Neal behind it, and all of these things, rushing up, doing sugar huddle, you know, somebody misses a block somewhere and you get cut down for a yard loss or whatever. And so, I think that there are times to be creative, and being creative is a lot of fun and can be really highly effective. And there are other times when, you know, you want to just say, hey, this is something we do really well, and we're going to run this, and we're going to execute it better than you can stop it.
Coming out of the spring showcase, what were maybe some of the things where you thought, okay, that's an area where Case still needs to work on? You kind of touched on it earlier in the show, but a couple things where maybe you're like, I don't know, that could be the difference between KU making it to the Big 12 title game or winning the Big 12 title versus being another 8-win team and kind of capping out like they did last season. What were some of the things you thought maybe KU still has room to improve on heading into the summer and fall?
Defensive end is scary. You know, with the, you know, I think there was a hope that, you know, Dylan Brooks would step up at that spot opposite Jeremy Robinson. And, you know, Brooks is a really twitchy guy. There's some ability there. And so for him to get hurt and miss the time that he did in the spring isn't big for everybody necessarily. You know, for some of them, it's just, hey, you know, shaking the cobwebs off or whatever. The spring could have been really big for a guy like Dylan to go through all of that, to build confidence, to get more used to what he's going to need to show this year. I think with neither he nor Jeremy Robinson participating in the spring showcase, it was apparent that Kansas needs another defensive end out there. I think Dylan Webke did some nice things, particularly against the run. I think Dean Miller did some good things, particularly against the pass, you know. But I think that if they can go out and get a guy who, you hate to say a plug-and-play starter necessarily, but somebody who can compete for that starting job, that would be something that would help them out a lot. And keep in mind, last year at this time, we were wondering about the defensive end spot opposite Jeremy Robinson. And obviously,
yes,
Booker wound up being a first-team All-Big 12 guy. And I'm not saying that that's going to happen again. I am just saying, you know, there is a chance to solve some of these things. I think linebacker, you know, depth is a little bit of an issue. I think defensive tackle, you know, they need to continue to develop some depth. The back line of Kansas's defense, I think, is really good. And I think the depth is really there. It's going to be that front seven or so where we're looking at it and saying, okay, is this going to be good enough? I think that Hawk spot, Craig Young's versatility was so important, and that you were able to keep him on the field more instead of making sort of situational subs. They're going to have to make those situational subs now, and those guys are going to need to play well. And then the other thing is, and I think this is something that you're worried about as well, just based on our conversations, that offensive line needs to come together. They lost some important guys there. They do bring back some guys who have played, you know, some football for them. When you look at, you know, Ford, when you look at Kobe Baines, when you look at Cable Dew, you know, Calvin Clements missing a lot of the spring kind of hurts. He will be back, you know, for fall practice, is my understanding. You know, Logan Brown was a revelation, I thought, this spring. When you look at every spring across the country, everybody has kind of a breakout guy that they say, okay, this is a guy who is maybe even better than we thought. I thought Logan Brown was potentially that guy. They need to get center solved. And I think that's an interesting thing, because bringing in, you know, Shane Bumgarner, a guy who had won the Remington Award at the Division II level, I think there was a lot of thought that he was just going to outright win the job. It was going to be his. He was going to plug right in for Mike Nowitzki. You weren't going to really miss a beat. That's a little bit more of a competition, according to Lance Leipold and the Kansas coaches. And so center is a spot that needs to get ironed out.
Yeah, I wonder if I was a little bit overzealous maybe on that thought with Shane Bumgarner, where it's like, okay, you bring in a guy who was the Remington Award winner at the D2 level. There you go. Problem solved. We're good. Nothing to worry about. And, you know, maybe getting a chance to speak to him after practice one of the days, you know, he said, listen, at Tiffin University in Ohio, which is where he's from, they have 8 total buildings on their entire campus. And now he's coming to Kansas, and it's crazy. So, you know, I don't know, man, maybe there's a bit of maybe we should have expected more of a transition period there for him, but I still have high expectations for him. I still hope that he can come along and really fill that gap, because if Shane Bumgarner can kind of secure that center position, like I think we hoped when he first committed to KU, that really opens up Kansas to a lot more flexibility around the rest of the offensive line. You look at a guy like Michael Ford. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I think Gildersleeve is going to be the most important coach in Bumgarner's life this year. And it's I know it's a different position, but, you know, he's talked about how Austin Booker heading into the summer was not the Austin Booker that we saw out on the field. You know, some of his movement skills weren't maybe what they should be or what they needed to be. And that was something that they were able to diagnose individually and really work on. And to great effect. And I think Bumgarner is a guy that Gildersleeve is going to kind of turn his magnifying glass on a little bit and look at him and say, okay, for him to be the guy that Kansas needs him to be, well, what's next? Well, what does he need to improve on? And so I think that as much as the fall camp is going to be important from a competition standpoint and things like that, I think the next few months are really going to determine what kind of season that he has, whether he's able to kind of iron some things out physically to get to where they need him to be.
Yeah, because if he can't secure that, you know, you look at a guy like Michael Ford, who I think is maybe the most flexible offensive lineman KU has in terms of where he could play. You have a guy like a Nolan Gorchica, who's got a little bit more run in this spring camp. You've got a guy like a Darnell Simmons, transfer from Iowa State, that maybe could be competing in that guard room. So if you're able to get Bumgarner locked in at the center position, that gives you a lot more opportunity to kind of play around with your offensive line in terms of the guards. And then I love what you've said about Logan Brown as well, because Logan Brown is a player that, you know, was a five-star guy going to Wisconsin, right? And was a really, really talented player. And then he's, you know, he enters the transfer portal, highly rated, you know, player in the transfer portal, comes to Kansas, and you're thinking, oh, this is awesome. I mean, we got a guy that's going to fit right into the offensive line. And, you know, unfortunately, he suffers an injury that kind of negatively, you know, impacted him and really kind of set him back. But I think what we're seeing from him, what we've seen from him this spring, is really, really positive in terms of taking over that sort of left tackle spot, right? Because you look at a guy like Bryce Cabledew, and I love Bryce Cabledew because I think he kind of understands what he is in the sense of he really is comfortable at the right tackle position, and that's where he's been. And when KU tried to put him a left tackle, he was like, hey, man, like right tackle is where I want to be. And so you love that. You love that he's got that locked down. But that does leave a question mark at the left tackle position. We saw Calvin Clements get the start in the bowl game to end the year, which is really exciting, right? A local guy, a Free State guy, which is really cool. But with him being out, it seems like Logan Brown has really taken the bull by the horn, so to speak, and kind of claimed that spot on the other side of the offensive line, which is fantastic news for KU because now you feel like, hey, we're anchored at both ends with two really, really quality offensive tackles, and we just need to iron out the middle, and then we'll be set.
Yeah, and I think Kansas wants to have, you know, say seven guys, maybe even more, but seven guys that you can rotate through. Remember last year, you know, a guy like Kobe Baines wasn't an every game starter. He was in that rotation that came through, and he played a lot of football with Armaji Reed Adams, Ford, and guys like that. But I think the other thing is Bumgarner securing that spot allows you to kind of find out who your six and seven are, you know. Those guys, you know, Calvin Clements is probably going to be in that conversation as somebody that you can roll through. I thought he played really well at times against UNLV, especially for a true freshman, you know, making his first career start. You know, he played pretty well. You like a lot of the things there. You know, I remember watching him at Kansas camp when he came in and worked out as a high school guy, and he looked kind of like a basketball player at that point, you know, hadn't really filled out, added the weight and strength and all the things that are necessary to play on the offensive line in the Big 12. And so his growth has been really encouraging. And I think that he projects as a multi-year starter at those spots. The good news is if he starts this next year, it's going to be because he earned it, not because he has to. And I think that when you look up and down Kansas's roster, whether it's offense, defense, whatever position, Kansas is in those spots now where you don't have to have a guy like Warner come in and start right away necessarily, because you have to have him start. If he winds up starting, it's going to be because he's really good and he wound up beating somebody out. And so I think, you know, Calvin Clements is one of those guys on the offensive line. I think Keaton Kubeka in that wide receiver room is another guy that is going to probably play quite a bit this year. Previously in his career, he might have been starting, you know, out there, and they don't necessarily need him to do that right now. And so I do think that up and down the roster, you know, this is probably as strong a roster as Kansas has had in a really long time.
So as Kansas kind of closes the book on spring ball, you have another opportunity in the transfer portal in the spring to possibly add a few players, or we've seen some players depart from KU. KU, as of right now, has four players that have departed from the program via the transfer portal: Akili Hubbard, Davion Westmoreland, along with Siraz Buncombe, and who am I missing, Kevin?
Red Martell,
that's right. Red Martell, a freshman who had enrolled early enrollee. So those are the four players that, as of right now, have departed from the program for KU via the transfer portal. Certainly wishing them the best going forward, wherever they may end up. And from the Kansas perspective, that leaves them with two open scholarships to work with in the transfer portal. And Kevin, first off, I was just thinking, you know, this is kind of a rare situation for KU to be in, because in so many previous years and previous head coaches that have been around at Kansas, it's been a struggle just to fill that 85 number of scholarships for in some cases. And now here we are with KU, you know, had some guys depart, and they do have a very limited number to work with, but they could still go out and add somebody, hopefully that couple players maybe that can help them out.
Yeah, yeah. When Charlie Weiss came in, you know, there were a lot of disciplinary issues, you know, with some of the Turner Gill guys and things like that. And he wound up, you know, booting off a lot of different guys. And I remember talking to him at Big 12 Media Day, and he was very frank, and he said that he didn't realize the impact that that would have on what Kansas was able to do from a practice and depth standpoint and all of those different things. Brought in a lot of junior college players to kind of try and fill those blanks. And then when you made the transition to David Beatty, you know, I've heard different numbers, but from different staff members, but it's between 38 and 42 scholarship players that David Beatty inherited when he came into Kansas. And so it was something that Beatty didn't really try to use as an excuse, but I think it says quite a bit that when Kansas lost to South Dakota State in the season opener, you know, Beatty's first year there, South Dakota State had more guys on scholarship than KU did, you know, as an FCS team. And so one of the things that was really tough was the 25-man limit and the recruiting classes, but the lack of a portal too. And I think one of the things that's great about Lance Leipold is he's been really honest about this. And one of the things that he said is that it was easier for him to build than it was for his predecessors, because you didn't have those limits. You could hit the transfer portal and fill out those scholarship numbers. And so, yeah, for Kansas to be exiting the spring with, I think, 87 scholarship guys that were slated to be on roster, where you actually have to lose a few guys to get back under it, and they have, you know, now had four guys transfer, is certainly a much more positive spot than lining up with an FCS team and being under scholarship to that FCS team.
Yeah, and you think about it now for KU, you kind of touched on it, but it certainly seems like the number one priority for KU at this point should be finding a pass rusher, right?
Yeah.
You know, you talked about it earlier in the show, but this has kind of been a recurring theme for KU, where every spring over the past couple of years, there has been that question of, oh, okay, what are we going to do with the pass rush? You know, you go back to Lance Leipold mentioned, hey, you know, in 2021, it was Kyron Johnson. And then in 2022, it was Lonnie Phelps. And then this year, it's Austin Booker that have left the program, and you're trying to figure out, okay, who's going to be the next guy? And for KU, you know, previously, I felt like even with the Lonnie Phelps departure, that felt like a big loss. But it seemed like you also maybe had some guys on the roster that you thought maybe we could potentially break out a little bit, like an Austin Booker, for example. So with this year, I am probably more concerned about the pass rush this year than maybe I was at this time last year, because, you know, you look at a guy like Jeremy Robinson, who has primarily been a strong side defensive end type player that has not necessarily been asked to maybe be the primary pass rusher. And I think the question for me last year was, well, can he step up and maybe become that? Well, turns out he didn't need to, because you got Austin Booker, who ended up becoming a first team All-12 player. But I don't know. I don't know if I see that as much on this roster right now. And so you wonder just how pressing of an issue it is that KU needs to find a defensive end in the transfer portal. But I know you've talked about it before, Kevin. There's 129 other FBS teams, yeah, that also are evaluating their pass rush and probably thinking, gosh, wouldn't we love to have just one more guy? So those are going to be, you know, highly coveted players throughout the country.
Yeah, and you look at some of the top programs in the country, and maybe they're looking at the same guy that Kansas is, but they're looking at that guy as their number four defensive end, whereas Kansas is kind of like, hey, we need this guy, you know, to start. And so it's going to be different to see how it is. I think, you know, the way Kansas uses NIL or doesn't use as much NIL, you know, for guys who aren't actually on roster, I think it's great, and that it keeps the locker room discord, I think, to a manageable level, because it's tough to coach when you've got a wide receiver who feels like he should be making NIL. He's been there for multiple years. He's played. He's done all the different things. And then you have a transfer coming in who's making a whole bunch of money, who hasn't suited up for a single down for you. And so I understand the theory, but also realistically, like an Ole Miss or somebody like that, they're going to throw money at a guy if they need a guy like that. They're going to use NIL as potentially a recruiting enticement. And so I think one of the interesting things to me, too, is them looking at that. They've kind of kicked the tires on a few guys, and it seems like they're open to either getting a weak side guy or getting a strong side guy and potentially moving Robinson over. And so that does open things up maybe a little bit to where you say, okay, you could go either way. I would be very interested to see how Robinson fared in more of that weak side type pass rushing role if they did wind up getting somebody who was a bigger body defensive end. They'd be pretty good against the run, I think, especially with those defensive tackles. But at the same time, you know, in the Big 12 and across college football, you need guys that can get after the quarterback. But like you said, you know, there's so many teams looking for that guy, whether it's somebody like Kansas that has a hole in the starting lineup potentially, or it's somebody like a Texas or a Florida State or somebody like that that says, hey, we feel pretty good about our pass rush, but one more guy couldn't hurt. And so that's part of the problem, too, is it's such a premium position that pretty much everybody is looking to see if there is a good guy that can make their team better.
Yeah, I think for KU, it's not all doom and gloom. They are a bit of a unique situation, and I think they have a lot of things that they could offer to players, right? I mean, to your point, you know, this is a team in KU that maybe they are one really quality pass rusher away from saying, okay, now we do feel like we're a Big 12 favorite, right? Or we are one of those top teams, right? And if you're looking for a guy that's going to maybe have multiple years of eligibility left, hey, we're building a brand new $400 million stadium that you could play in next season also. And even beyond that, like saying, hey, you could play a game at Arrowhead, maybe that's a selling point for some guys. You know, I think KU definitely has some other things going for them of, hey, listen, you know, we feel like we're a piece away. We feel like we have different things to offer you. So it's not really all doom and gloom, but I do wonder if KU is unable to get a defensive end in this portal cycle in the spring, what that means for them going into the fall and how much of an issue it could become at that point. So I do think it's pretty critical that KU finds somebody. To your point, maybe it's not necessarily like an A-plus pass rush type. Maybe it's another guy like a Dylan Woodke, who I think is already a great addition in terms of stopping the run, but somebody that can be on that side as well and maybe free up a guy like Jamie Robinson a little bit more. But yeah, it is a pretty big concern at this point for me and whether or not they're able to do that. And that's something that I will be certainly keeping an eye on, I think, as we both will probably throughout the rest of this spring.
Yeah, I think you're looking for somebody who can rush the passer on first down, because I think they've got some guys that if it's third and 10, everybody knows they're throwing it. I think they've got some guys that maybe don't have as much size that you feel okay about being out there, whether that's a Dean Miller, whether you're feeling like, hey, one of the freshmen like a Warner is going to be able to come in and chase quarterbacks on third down. I think what is going to be the challenge there is feeling like you have somebody that could be out there on first down against the run, but hey, if a pass play is called, they can still get after the quarterback. And so I think that's what they want. It's going to be tough to find. It's going to be key for them to find it. And now we're waiting to see how they use that scholarship and whether they can get somebody in. And I'm interested to see what they do with that other scholarship too, because we have talked, you know, about defensive end here. Does the other one go to another defensive tackle to add depth there? Is it a linebacker thing? Is it, you know, the sort of thing where it's, you know, best player available that you think would fit? Or is it even the sort of thing where you take a Dylan Brooks or a Demarius McGee or somebody like that that maybe is a little ways away, might not help you this year, but both of those guys were former four-star prospects. There was a lot of talent there. They started off, you know, at SEC schools. You were able to upgrade your talent by bringing those guys in and the thought that they could help you on down the line, even if it's not this year. Look at this year's roster with Cornell Wheeler. You know, he may wind up starting at that middle linebacker spot. He was a guy they brought in a couple years ago from Michigan, didn't really play a ton right away. Last year he had some good moments. He had the interception against Texas, right, I think?
Yep. Yep.
And so, you know, he's a guy that was coming from a major program, wasn't going to help them immediately, but with somebody that projected down the road to be able to help them. And so do they put all the bullets in the gun and say, hey, you know, what else do we need to win the Big 12 this year? Or do they wait and say, hey, if there's a really talented guy out there, especially at a position that we need, maybe something like wide receiver, where you're losing four or five guys after the season, do you go ahead and make a move on that guy thinking, hey, you're probably going to redshirt this year, or you may just not play a lot, but next year, you know, we're going to have a major need of your services?
Well, the good news is this is probably the most highly anticipated Kentucky football season in almost 15 years. The bad news, we still got to wait over 5 months. Oh, my gosh, it's terrible. But that's our Kentucky football spring wrap-up here with Kevin Flaherty. I'm Nick Spring. This is the Payee Podcast. If you liked what you heard or saw, be sure to like and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening or watching. Leave us a comment. Give us a review. It helps us spread our podcast. And we'll be back more talking all things KU, KU basketball, KU football, and more here on the Payee Podcast. Thanks so much to you, Kevin. Thanks so much to our partners, Emprise Bank and Homefield Apparel. We will talk to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to KC Sports Network. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard. You can find all six of our channels covering the Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.